Hi, everyone. I am Josh Nason, and this is Josh Nason's Punch-Out, episode 100. That's right. Welcome back. It's been a long time. Been a lot of things going on here behind the scenes in life and website stuff in general, so I appreciate your patience as I took a little siesta, but I'm back. And again, I want to make episode 100 a special one, and my God, this past week, UFC TV deals and the like, and even dating back to last week with the SmackDown, and maybe that was this week. There's been a lot of stuff going on. However, I mean, we're here. We finally kind of have an idea of what's happening with the future. These TV deals we've been talking about forever, and helping me talk about that and some other stuff, I have not one, not two, but three big guests for you. How about that? We kick off with the one and only John Pollock of Post Wrestling, co-founder, owner, titan of business. We talk about, we started talking about a little about UFC, WWE TV stuff, but we talked about Mauro Ranallo and his documentary that is coming out tonight, if you're listening to this, Friday the 25th, on Showtime, about his battles with bipolar disorder. And I would highly recommend the interview that he did on Ariel Helwani's MMA Hour. It was about an hour. Well worth seeing. So I would definitely check that out. And so John, I talked about that. We also talked about Ariel's move to ESPN and some other stuff as well. And how, honestly, how Post Wrestling is going. So it was a good conversation there. We then will flip to one of two interviews I did with awfulannouncing.com personnel. And it, just by complete coincidence, that's how it worked out this week. We kick off with our old friend, Andrew Buchholz, who joined me about a few months ago to talk about the UFC TV and WWE TV deals as we're kind of in the, I would say the infancy stages, but still kind of the speculation stages. I think it was back, it might have been in March, if I remember right. So we chatted about that and kind of his take on everything that's been going on with the with this week and all the ramifications and so on. And then we also, we wrap up with the managing editor of Awful Announcing, and Joe Lucia. Joe wrote a column for this website, Awful Announcing, 5 questions that need answers following the UFC's reported TV deal with ESPN. So we went through all those different questions and kind of talked about some stuff. So that was about a 20-minute interview here. So yeah, about an hour and a half in addition to the show. You guys deserve it. Again, it's episode 100, so we want to make it big, and we appreciate all the support. So without further ado, let's get to the show. Kick off with John Pollock, then kicking it to Andrew Buchholz, then kicking it to Joe Lucia. Josh Ace's Punch-Out, JNPO 100 is here. Enjoy. Well, everyone, with this being episode 100, I had to bring one of our most popular guests of all time. Yes, of all time. He is a big-time entrepreneur, a businessman, a titan of business in the world. I was going to say in our friends to the north, but just actually in North America, really.
He is the entire universe.
The entire, yes, the post-wrestling universe. The one and only John Pollock has returned. And John, as you drink your coffee, as we talk in this this fine Friday morning, I'll ask you the really tough question first. How are you?
I'm doing, you know what? I'm going to give an honest answer. I'm doing satisfactory today. It's relatively early, especially by the standards you and I usually discuss. So I'm doing satisfactory right now and hopefully on an upward trend throughout the day.
Mm. I like that answer. I like when people ask you, you know, in the morning, the typical, you know, how are you doing today? And I'm like, I'm doing okay. Or I'm well, or
I never take it as serious when someone's, I'm doing great. It's like, I doubt you're doing great, or else great is just a synonym for average. And suddenly great is no longer great any longer. It's you build towards great. You're probably, odds are 95% of the time you're going to catch somebody by saying, how are you doing? Mm-hmm. They're okay. Mm. They're in the moment. It's fine.
I would agree. And I would encourage everyone listening to do the same now. People ask you, how are you doing? Be honest. Just say, could be better.
And be prepared for that answer as well. You may get something. Maybe you're going to unlock some awful day that this person has encountered, and you're going to be their lifeline.
Mm. I would agree. Let's see. Let's be our lifelines, John, as we have been so often in the past. So I've heard of a pretty
Congratulations on episode 100. Let's get the congratulatory messages out there. 100 episodes.
Yeah, I was waiting for that, John. Thank you very much. I have not received any gifts from anyone yet.
This means you can now sell this for syndication.
Yes, well, right? That's
100.
Well,
that's the magic number.
Well, that was kind of my breaking news I was going to have on this, is that I've signed a major deal to WrestlingObserver.com to syndicate the show in the same feed as before. So, it's pretty big news. So I appreciate you bringing that up.
Wonderful. You're going the Bellator model, where your big one of your 100th shows, it is on a slight tape delay.
Yes, as always. Yes, I draw all my inspiration from Bellator these days. I'm gonna start bringing on old guests from the past and old terrible writers we had from the past and see if they have it one last time. You know, maybe I'll bring out what was that guy, Scott Keith? You remember that guy? It used to do like all types of like wrestling rumors and things like
Scott
that.
Scott Keith. Yeah. Sorry. You're saying like Bellator. I'm like, I don't remember a fighter named Scott Keith. But of course, the wrestling reporter, Scott Keith. Yes. Yeah,
yes.
I have one of his. He did the Blog of Doom. And I believe I have one of his books somewhere stored away somewhere from the late 90s, early 2000s.
I think I do as well. I think it is if I remember right, Steve Austin is stunning the Big Show on the cover, I think.
Yes, right? Yes.
Is it in this corner or something like that?
Yeah, it was one of those. I mean, pro wrestling titles have really gone through. I hope we're kind of through the phase of, you know, body slam, the so-and-so story. We haven't quite got through the play on words for, like, your newspaper title. Like, WWE gets a raw deal out of their new television contract. They're going to smack down the competition. I mean, we're not quite past there, but I think for wrestling book titles, we've moved past a certain obvious editorial insertion of, hey, this would be a great title for your wrestling audience.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, what's your take on all the TV stuff that's happened? Obviously, I think I'll give you mine real quick. So,
sure.
I'm shocked that WWE is getting paid, out of all this, is going to get paid more than UFC. I'm pretty stunned by that. And that I think it was smart on their part, if this was Ari Emanuel's suggestion or not, but to basically split up Raw and SmackDown again and to be able to get the money that they're going to get. And I think that ESPN I think it's going to be a really good fit for UFC. I think I am looking forward to ESPN pushing back a little bit on some things and hopefully improving things. I think that's what all of us kind of hope, is that, you know, even though UFC is handling the production elements again, which I was a little disappointed about, I hope that they are able to drive them towards, you know, increased success and even just a more engaging product and not just a set it and forget it product.
Yeah, I guess my first real takeaway is just looking at, you know, these two companies and looking at where their health was, say, 20 years ago, 97, 98, and here they are. They're going to take in $4 billion in rights fees over the next 5 years, which is an astounding figure. I think that the big curveball in all of this was Fox not just wanting to get the Raw property, but putting SmackDown onto Big Fox. I think that dramatically changed the dynamics of where everyone assumed these planes were going to land. And I think it threw a curveball for the UFC. I think that everybody was stunned that not so much SmackDown going to the Fox family, but getting onto the network and at that price tag. So it was a home run in my estimation for the WWE. I don't know how you can look at this, especially just a year ago, of what they ended up landing for their rights deals in comparison to the UFC, which was still, it's still like a dramatic increase for them. They have still, throughout all of this, maintained pay-per-view revenue. So it's hardly like the UFC walks away from this a loser. If we were judging this was hardly a 10-8 round. I would say it was a 10-9 round for the WWE. And that's quite the accomplishment given where these two promotions have been over the past 5 years and where they were trending towards when these contracts came due. It's huge for SmackDown to be on Fox. I think that comes with a lot of pressure with them to maintain an audience, to grow an audience as well, which is,
yeah,
that to me is also something in so many of these broadcasters now. It's maintaining an audience. Now you're in a position, you do need to grow this audience. And that's so much of the WWE's television product has just been, well, let's minimize the losses year over year. And if it's a 1 or 2% decrease, that's great. That's fantastic. And now you're putting them in a position on Fox where you're going to get an artificial bump. But as well, spending all this money, SmackDown is now making more than it ever has by a significant margin, that there's going to be expectation level when you're talking about what their audience is now versus what this money is going to command out of them. And then just quickly on the ESPN front, yeah, I'm with you. I'm curious to see how this marriage works, where the UFC is not going to be the top property within ESPN. I think that UFC maintaining the control of their production. I was hoping that ESPN would kind of take over a significant portion of it. I want to watch a broadcast that it is presented much more like it's a impartial sports broadcast rather than just the UFC in-house. And there's good and bad to all of that, depending on what side of the coin you come from. But that's going to be, I think they're with a broadcaster that is not going to be afraid to push back against the UFC, as opposed to Fox, that I think they were just simply there and willing to green light whatever the UFC wanted.
One thing, it was just this really just stuck out to me, and I think it has probably for some people for a while. You know, in both of these businesses, it is prone to criticism as far as how the business is run, how the booking is done, both from, you know, UFC and WWE's perspective. Obviously, people complain about creative all the time. That's just part of being a fan of the stuff, right? And these entities have had to hear criticism for obviously years and years and years. That's just part of the game. But in the end, both these guys, Vince and Dana and crew, they won. And it really doesn't matter what any of us say, because think of like the bad year UFC has had, obviously with a lack of attractions. You think of how much people complain about booking. I mean, with WWE, I mean, look at the post backlash reaction and just how legit angry it seemed like a lot of people were. And maybe we're just in our Twitter bubble. But, you know, and compared to other, you know, the way that people complain about Roman Reigns and all this stuff, in the end, none of it matters, because they were able to get these entities to give them both tons of money without these major stars and draws. Obviously, Ronda Rousey, you know, probably definitely played a hand in that. But in the end, like, they won. And it's like we can complain all we want about who is where and who's getting booked how and who's in the main event and Daniel Bryan big cast this and Roman Reigns that. Ultimately, it doesn't matter. They won. We don't matter.
Well, that's a real, it's a really bright way to just position everything here, Josh.
Yeah,
I think that both companies have insulated themselves now, where you're right. You cannot necessarily, you don't have to rely on great booking. You don't have to fixate on, oh, this fight doesn't make sense for this reason. You know, the UFC is, both promotions are still incentivized by platforms that still have growth attached to them. It's just now you have the ultimate cushion that are these rights fees that you are attached to for at least 5 years. And of course, there's always going to be that desire to keep your audience as high as possible, because these deals are not infinite. They do come up, and especially with Fox, that's an outlet that, I mean, could very well move you. And that would be that would be a blow, I think, to the prestige that they have acquired here. If 1 year in, SmackDown is quietly moved to FS1.
Yeah,
as a downgrade. So of course there's that incentive, but I think that this company, both of them, they are no longer as reliant on creating that next superstar, because you've got so much of this income coming your way that if the mindset is simply maintain, they can do that. They're going to put on whatever fights they want. They're going to put together whatever stories they want. But there's no gun to their head to have to improve anything, to have to change anything, to write a tighter Monday Night Raw show that has 6 week story arcs, that is a very tight program and fleshing out more characters. There's really no need to be worrying about that to any degree now. They are just so profitable at this time where television is going to dominate. And it's only a question of how profitable each of these companies will be every year, as opposed to what kind of year this is going to be. If we have a ton of injuries, how's that going to affect us? It's like pay-per-view could die for this company for an entire year, and they're going to be fine taking in $300 million a year from ESPN. So I look at it as a lot of these stars having less leverage rather than more. I feel that the UFC, even in this past 10 years, look how Dana White has dealt with so many of his top stars. There are very rare instances of stars that he has gone to bat for, that he's been much more willing to just throw out under the bus to the public, whether it is George St. Pierre or Alistair Overeem or Tito Ortiz or John Jones. I mean, all of these guys, whether it was deserved or not, Dana White never showed kind of that protection of his stars. And now I don't think you need to be as reliant on anybody. It's just plugging in fights. It's great if you can create those stars, and then you have a platform like pay-per-view that you can send these people to, that you can make even more money on. And for the WWE, I feel they're still incentivized to push people to the WWE network, because that's not fixed revenue every year. That's a growth model. That's something that, hey, if we are suddenly broadcasting SmackDown to 5 million viewers every Friday night, that's several million more than are watching the show now. And if we can send some of those to become network subscribers, that's found money for us. So I don't know how much it's going to change their business, and especially the WWE, that if we look at these past 20 years, they don't really alter that presentation of the television product all that much. Their business has changed a lot, but the actual on-screen product, I think you can go back and watch a Raw from 15 years ago, transport to today, and the pillars are still in place of how they present television.
Yeah, good. So you hit on a few good points there. One in particular was, I think ultimately this is what drives all criticism, is we want them to get better. We see that there's an ability to get better. And when I say that, I mean, you know, obviously when you judge things, it's whether it's a fight, whether it's a TV show, anything like that, everyone's going to come with their own perspective. But when there's kind of this consensus around, like, I don't think this is obviously a new thought, and say their talent roster from WWE all the way down and the NXT level is the most loaded it has ever been. When you like look at the past couple of years and who they have brought on for talent. I mean, it's like if 5 years ago you'd be like, look, they're going to have, you know, the Samoa Joes, the Adam Coles, the EC3s, the Ricochets, Daniel Bryan, AJ Styles, Nakamura, all like if these guys, they're going to have all these guys in 5 years. People are like, how in the hell are they going to do that? And they did it, and they have it from top to bottom. And we see it, and it's like you could put together a show that is so compelling for wrestling fans, because you have every card in the deck now, every single card. So what's it's incredible is just they have this, and then they put on shows like Backlash. It's like, how does that happen? I think that's the frustration and the want them to get better, and where it, and my hope is that it comes in from that internal, you know, we need to have great ratings on Fox. We need to really, you know, make things happen and drive more network subscriptions and all that, and not do things where it's like, what are we doing here, right? You want the buzz factor, and that's what's been so disappointing, I think. And that's, you know, with these whole TV deals really kind of to put into play, is that they can, where is that incentive going to come from? And I hope that internal drive is still there. Sometimes it comes from changes in leadership. Vince McMahon, you never know. You know, he's an older guy. Maybe we all assume he's going to go till he's dead. You know, things happen. You know, when's the Triple H's time to take over? As we all expect it will. With Dana White, we expect him to be there for a long time, and perhaps something needs to change there in order for things to be shaken up a little bit. So I don't know. It's a long-winded way of saying I hope they have the incentive to put on the best product, which is something that I just don't know from either company. We've really got the creme de la creme of the best consistently week after week.
Yeah, well, it's interesting when you look at the WWE and what they have grown to become, and this is only reinforced with this television money on top of things. Like, this was already by leaps and bounds the number one pro wrestling company in the world. That So Wei and I this week were one of the shows we reviewed was a Ring of Honor show from 2014 here in Toronto. And you're looking up and down this roster. Mm. And we counted on this show, I think it was around 15 or 16 people that have since left that company for the WWE, for wherever, for NXT, 205 Live, or on the main roster. And that's a staggering number. That's like an extreme number. But going back just 4 years, it's a totally different company that you're watching Ring of Honor versus today. And not to say that you want to lose 16 people and be just scrambling, but Ring of Honor has done okay. They haven't, you know, struggled during that transition either. In fact, they've grown from it. And with the WWE, they have such a foothold on this industry that you're never going to see half of that disappear. Like, unless a top guy gets injured or is an anomaly that wants to leave, like a CM Punk, like that core, that core at the top is there, and they're probably going to be there for years. I wouldn't doubt that, barring injury, 5, 6, 7 years from now, Seth Rollins is going to be in main events, Finn Balor is going to be in main events, Roman Reigns is going to be in main events. Like, you sometimes, if you remove a few key pieces, it totally revitalizes things, and that's not something you're injecting a lot. The WWE is introducing more names, but you're also not removing any either. And that was always an analogy used for sports teams, was that even if you're a championship level team, you make 10% roster changes for the next year because it replenishes things, it changes up the dynamic, mm-hmm. and you don't get stagnant. And I'm not even saying that the in-ring product is stagnant. It certainly isn't. But for the fan experience, I think they really get engaged when they see new characters mixed into that top mix. And go back to 97, like the rise in 98 of Austin, Rock, and Triple H. I think part of that was assisted by the fact that your two big pillars from the year before in Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels, they weren't around any longer. Yep. And conversely, that's worked every generation where, you know, Hogan leaves, that opens up new opportunities. Like, there wasn't anyone that immediately succeed Hogan, but that was the thinking. It was not having those shadows over top of you either. So you look at this main roster, and I think that the main event talent, again, barring injury, these are talents that are going to be there year over year over year, regardless of their skill set or talent. I think sometimes that freshness really revitalizes things, opens yourself up to new stories and different avenues you can go down. And they're not, it doesn't seem like that's a model that WWE is going to be able to execute.
So as we talk on this Friday, Mauro Ranallo's documentary on Showtime premieres tonight, being Friday night. And obviously, you know, most people either watch it live and obviously on demand viewing and so on. I assume you have seen this.
I saw a copy of, like, a rough cut of this like 3 years ago. So I imagine the version I saw is going to be very different from what airs tonight, because what I saw, that was pre-WWE, it's pre-Mayweather McGregor. So I'm actually going to be seeing it on Sunday night, because there's going to be a screening here in Toronto. So I'll be seeing the version that, yeah, actually it's airing in Canada tonight as well, but I'm going to wait to watch it on Sunday.
So Mauro did a pretty intense interview on the MMA Hour on Monday, which I would urge, Dave Meltzer mentioned earlier this week, but I would urge people to see. Did you see that?
Yes. Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was tremendous.
Obviously, you got brought up a few times, as you're obviously friends with Mauro and Ariel and everything. I guess for those people seeing this, and Grand just said you had not seen it yet. I mean, what else should we know about Mauro? I mean, he basically bared his soul. I think everyone kind of knows what the story is, and we'll know a lot more. I mean, for him to do this and put himself out there like this, this is a tremendous, I would almost say humanitarian effort in a way to kind of put a face to being bipolar in this disorder and what it does to people and people that from the outside see as a huge success. Cause he's living the dream, but in the personal life, when it comes to stuff, at times he's really lived a nightmare. And just from someone that has known him as well as you do, this took quite an effort to do this, I assume.
Yeah. I mean, Mauro has, for the longest time, he hasn't been shy about talking about all of this. And I give him a lot of credit, because I don't know how many of us would be willing to be so public about these struggles, knowing knowing what the stigma is that's out there. And I think that's all the more reason why Morrow has opted to do this, because that stigma does exist. And he's so popular that he is someone that can go out there and he's not going to fit. Like, it's been brought up in these interviews, like, is this going to have repercussions on your employment? And I think there's no way it would at this stage of the game. But I honestly believe that this is going to be what Mauro Ranallo is remembered for, is talking about this aspect of his life more so than the broadcasting. I think everyone is familiar with Mauro Ranallo in this world, whether it's boxing, MMA, or pro wrestling. But this is something that today he's on the front page of the LA Times sports section. Like, this is a mainstream story. And I just think that it's going to be, I'm very curious what the reception is like to this documentary, because I think a lot of people that are going to sit down and watch this on Friday night are going to be blown away, because it's one thing to hear someone describe these issues. It's quite another to see them. And I've seen it up close with him. And in this documentary, like, the camera is on him at his worst. Like, this is like after calling a Mayweather fight and he's in his hotel room and he's breaking down. Like, you think that this guy has just come off the top of the mountain and it's a big crash down afterwards. And this is every day for him. This is it's peaks and valleys for being someone that is bipolar. But yeah, like, I've seen this guy at his highest and I've seen him at his lowest. And it was, it takes you back when you watch this. Like, there's some stunning footage in this documentary that you're amazed is caught on camera.
So speaking of Ariel, obviously I mentioned him a second ago. He had some big news this week, and obviously along with all the ESPN stuff. And obviously you're friends with him, but what do you think about his prospects going to ESPN?
I think that it's a giant step for Ariel in his career. Going there is that's. That's where many broadcasters in sports, that's where you want to end up, is at ESPN. And he's going to be their top mixed martial arts reporter. I think that Ariel has earned that status, and everybody knows it. I think it leaves a big hole at MMA fighting. I think that everyone looks at this, and it's going to be the obvious question that comes up, is that it was so public what happened with him and Fox. And now he's going to ESPN, which is going to be the home of the UFC. And that's a difficult balancing act to maintain. And I'm glad that it's ESPN, because from the evidence that you and I were talking about earlier with ESPN, I don't think that's a network that is going to just simply step back and allow the UFC to just dictate terms to them. I don't think ESPN they're going to, just succumb to that.
They're going to stay on their ground.
Yeah. So I feel that Ariel is going to do very well at ESPN. At the same time, that's a relationship that everyone knows the public issues that have existed there between Ariel Helwani and Dana White. So I hope for his sake that it's a conflict free one. And he'll obviously see how it turns out. I think the fact that if this were a smaller network, I think you would worry about what kind of position he's entering into. But I don't really see that being the case at ESPN, where they have had that separation between themselves.
If I was Jimmy Vitaro, that's his name, I believe, from the new guy at ESPN, the new head, I would bring Dana White and Ariel together in a room and just iron it out and be like, look, from two sides of the equation here, we need this to work. And granted, you're the journalist, Ariel, you're the promoter, Dana, but as far as from a company perspective, this just doesn't make sense for us to have this conflict going on. And what can we do to best resolve it? Because we're investing a lot of money in this, in both of you. What do we got to do to make it work? I would love to see that happen, because I think the sport is better when you have, those interviews that Ariel used to do with Dana, they were insightful, they were good, they were must watch. And when these, just this change, I think I think Dana needs to grow up and kind of move past it, you know, and that's probably easier said than done. But I think it's time to kind of like maybe just let this thing, just let it resolve and kind of just get back to business and not have this thing hanging over him, especially with this big deal for both, you know, coming up in January. And granted, they may just be like, you know, it is what it is, and that's it. I would love to see this issue get ironed out.
Yeah, I don't even know if that needs to be done though, because to me, it's two separate sides that are not meant to be working together. The media covers the subject. I mean, this would not be, you know, it would be, you know, like imagine it in the wrestling world of, you know, this would never happen because they would never be employed together. But sitting down a Dave Meltzer and a Vince McMahon and saying, guys, I want you to just get along. The job is not to get along. The job is that Dave covers Vince McMahon's business. And there is going to be that divide. Like, they are never going to be on the same side working together, because at times, yeah, you're reporting positive news, but other times you're just reporting. That's the nature of what it is. So to me, it's simple. Ariel Helwani is our reporter, and he has free rein to report, because we entrust him with that because he has earned that status. And Dana White, we are the rights holder, and he is going to report on you as a sport, as a news outlet. That is also what we are. And this is going to be something that so many young journalists and broadcasters are going to go through, because this is the modern media world where it all comes down to, does a Jimmy Pitaro look at ESPN and state that, listen, our journalism is something I highly value, and there's going to be church and state within here? Or is it, we are paying billions of dollars for this UFC entity. Do we want to create any problems with them? I mean, look what happened with Bill Simmons and one comment about Roger Goodell, and he's suspended over it.
Yeah.
And I think these are going to be conflicts everyone goes through. And to me, the worst part is that so often the people that are just, you know, fans of this, that observe this, always believe that there's this deep-rooted conflict of interest, that there's, that these journalists are biased or all of this. And it's like, I can't tell you how frustrating it is when that perception is just thrown out there. And I knew that firsthand when I was at the Fight Network, and all of a sudden they're in bed with TNA. And, you know, I got it both ways from people that, you know, just said, oh, you're just going to be a shill for Impact. While the other side, it was, why is he so negative about Impact? He should be just all positive for it because he works there. And it was like, no, that to me just told me that I was just doing my job as I should have. I have zero regrets about how I covered this. I was never dictated anything. Like, I was on my own island. And I think that is a professional reporter or a journalist. And I don't think a lot of that credit is often given to these people about, like, the ethics that they bring to this job. And I would place Ariel Helwani at the absolute top of that for people that are going to be second guessing him working for a company that also happens to have the rights to the UFC.
Hmm. Well, you talked me out of it, John. I applaud your effort there, and you were absolutely right. So I'm retracting that. I hope they fight forever. I'm going to chant fight forever if I ever see them.
No,
I get what you mean. No, you know what? You make perfect sense.
If you're ESPN, like, this is the high wire act that is a news source and also a television property, and that's what all of these outlets are dealing with now. It's I just hope that there is separation, and it's like the news division is the news division, and the entertainment sports division, that is the television side, and there is a giant wall in between them. One covers the other, and that's how it's run. It's two separate entities of what is ESPN. And that's, to me, how it should be.
Yep, I would agree. Very good points. One other thing. Oh, really quick, as we kind of round the bend here. If you're MMA fighting, what do you do? You know, I think this is a big question that they obviously have a deep roster of talent. We know this. We know basically all the guys and gals that work there. Super talented, but I think the biggest challenge that they're going to have is, it's not just, you know, I would not try to, if I was Brian Tucker, Brian Tucker, I think that's his name. I don't know if I'd necessarily try to just run everything back with doing the MMA hour again and doing like a Monday show. I think that's because Ariel's going to be doing his show, and that just seems – I don't know if you try to do that. I think you try to figure out what you're going to do with your on-the-road coverage, you know, perhaps the – because Ariel did a lot of the, you know, the pre-show, post-show type stuff. So I think you kind of maybe – coach some of your guys. Maybe it's Sean Alshadi and Dave Doyle handle the West, and or Mark Raimondi handles the West, and you have some guys handle the East, and try to kind of figure out how you're going to do that. But I think that's a huge challenge for them, is because, you know, Luke Thomas is essentially part time there because he does the serious stuff and is so involved there. They have a big challenge there with trying to fill the space without seeming like they're just going to do the same thing, just with a different person, because I think we both know that'd be pretty difficult to do.
No, I think, you know, it's not all that different from our discussion about when you lose a major talent. Yeah, it's a loss, but it's also the opportunity to innovate and do something completely different. And that would be my recommendation, is, you know, putting someone in that chair Mondays at 1, going head to head with Ariel on Ariel's old show. I don't think that's going to serve anyone anything. I don't think that it's fair to that person that they're put in that position. Let whoever that person is going to be, and it may be several people that end up filling the roles that Ariel held. As you mentioned, there's no shortage of great reporters and talent at MMA Fighting. I think they are an outstanding site, and I think now is the time that they have to throw a bunch of ideas out and say, what can we do that is different now? What can we do that is removed from this, you know, not going Mondays 1 till 6 p.m., but what are other ideas that we can do that are innovative, that can incorporate new talent and present things as, you know, it's not the same. We're doing different things. And I think that is the opportunity here for MMA Fighting. Yes, you're losing Ariel, but it also frees up abilities to go out and hire some new faces, some new voices, and try and just do things differently. Like I'm never a proponent of just simply plugging someone in to replace a hole. To me, it's like, that's an opportunity to assess how are we doing things? Like, what can we do that is different? And that would be my idea.
Mm-hmm. So final question. Last time I talked to you, you had basically just launched Post Wrestling and actually one of the best performing podcasts I've done on this very website. Was the launch, the behind the scenes of the launch of Post Wrestling. You were so great kind of talking to me about that. And a lot of people were interested in it. And obviously it's been a great success so far. And just go kind of get an update on how things have gone, surprises along the way, and, you know, kind of the highs and lows of being your own boss in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's been a really, really intense couple of months. Just, you know, getting this launched, we were really blown away by just the response that we got when we came out of the gate. I mean, it was far beyond, like, we didn't go in really with many expectations of like what number of people would be signing up for something like this. Like we figured, you know, it could be 20 people, and then we've got to reassess and try and grow this thing. We were lucky enough that it was a lot higher number than that. And then it was kind of just adjusting after that to doing all the work. It's like, this is pretty much all day, every day for Wei and myself, several other shows that we have up on the site. I would say that a lot of the business stuff that's been stuff that is just very, very time consuming that Wei and I have had to do, you know, whether it's, you know, filing for trademarks, whether it's speaking with accountants, with lawyers, putting together shareholder agreements, you know, things that you don't necessarily imagine having to deal with in such minute detail, and discussing what will happen if you die. That's always that's always a wonderful topic to wake up in the morning to discuss. But no, I can honestly say, though, like, I don't think I've ever had a more enjoyable period of my career, though, than these last 5 months. Doing this on your own, it's just it's completely different. I don't know if I'm like an anomaly, but the idea of just being in a, like, there's a lot of positives to being on a team, for working for a company. But for me, it's like I got that out of my system. I very much wanted something of my own. That Wei and I, we have full control over. If this falls on our face, if we fall on our face, that's completely on us. And if it succeeds, it's our decision making that is going into all of that. So I have a really hard time imagining being in an environment again where I'm not controlling that. So I mean, it gets kind of deep and stuff, but like these 5 months, it's a lot more to me than just a wrestling site. I find I've learned quite a lot about myself and what I really want to do. And I went through a lot of that in 2017 as well, like my last year at the Fight Network. Like it really forced me to think about like, what do I want out of this career? What do I want to be doing every day? And it took that push when I was let go in October to kind of force myself, okay, you've been talking about this, you've been thinking about this. Now you have no excuse to not do this. And Wei was the same way. I wouldn't have been able to do this without Wei. And you know, the fact that both of us were let go together, it was like a gift for the two of us. So I guess in a roundabout Wei, like the highs are just having that freedom, that seeing the success, meeting people that are really like enjoying the content, that are enjoying the site. That's phenomenal. Like when we went down to New Orleans for WrestleMania weekend, that was tremendous. We got out to a bunch of shows, just pumped out quite a lot of content that week. It was a really like high point for the site doing that weekend. Just to get there to New Orleans just a few months into our launch, that was a big achievement. And the lows, like it's a lot of minutia that you're dealing with on a day-to-day basis. You know, you can't work with every single person. Like it's very difficult when you're running it, it's your funding that's going into all of this. It definitely affects your change, your thought process, your decision making. Yeah, there's days that are not great. I'll be perfectly honest. Like there's great days, there's bad days, there's everything in between. But I would never regret launching this at all. It's been something that Wei and I had wanted to do for a long, long time. And just finally getting that push to do it, it's been extremely rewarding. Like there was nothing, I couldn't imagine giving this up at all.
Well, from having known you years ago when you booked me on the MMA show with Maura Rinaldo, giving me my first shot to being a titan of business in Toronto, I'm very proud of your success, and all of us are behind you guys, as you know, and always been a great friend of the site, and yeah, you guys are going to keep doing just fine. And I think it was a very smart idea for you to get out to some of these shows and these events. Obviously WrestleMania weekend, all that as well. Are you guys doing that All In weekend? Anything there?
Yeah, it's up in the air right now. Like what the plan is to be there. Yeah, in Chicago that weekend. Details to be determined. Are you going to that show?
I am not going to that show. We will have obviously Dave and Brian are doing a live observer show. I'd love to go. I am my wife is having some nasal surgery the week before, and I'm also going to see Pearl Jam twice at Fenway Park that weekend. So my plate's a little bit full, but I tell you, those guys, like, amazing to be able to sell that show out in like half an hour. That's incredible. I did not expect them to sell it that quickly. That was just amazing. It's one of the biggest stories of the year to me so far.
Oh, hands down. Yeah, I don't think the biggest optimist could have predicted that. I certainly didn't.
Yeah. Well, John, give you one last chance to plug away. Obviously, people know they can follow you on Twitter and get you at Post Wrestling. Anything specific that you want people to know they should check out?
Yeah, if you want to go, the website is postwrestling.com. That's where we have all our news, all of our shows are housed. And then if you want to join our Patreon, it's postwrestlingcafe.com. We drop minimum one bonus show a week, and we're also now doing regular video updates up there as well. So you can go check all of that out. Yeah, it's $6 is where it starts at, and that gets you minimum one, sometimes more bonus shows each week. And then we have a plethora of free shows up at postwrestling.com. So those are the two places to check out. And congratulations, Josh, on on 100 shows. It's, you know, I always tell people that are starting shows, it's just keep doing it. And the fact that, you know, you've done 100 of these, and it's like, you're a very busy person yourself. It's like, it shows your, I'm just very happy that it's a really fun show you do each week. And thanks a lot for having me on several times.
Yeah, you're glad. Thank you very much. And the best gift you could have got me, John, was your appearance today. And we look forward to having you back many times in the future. Again, if your personal assistant gets back to me and, you know, being the businessman and all that stuff, we'll work those things out. But John Pollock, thanks so much for returning to Josh Jason's Punch Out, the 100th episode. We can't wait to talk to you again. Well, finally, everyone, finally, we have resolution to the UFC's TV contract. And it comes at a little bit of a surprise, I guess, to some. But, you know, we're here. ESPN, $300 million a year, give or take, five-year deal. All types of follow-up from this, a lot of questions, a lot of answers. And helping me do that as part of the celebration here this week is our old friend, Andrew Buchholz of Awful Announcing, also with a comeback, board game aficionado, list goes on and on. And Andrew, we'll welcome you back to the show. And for those of my listeners that are also fellow board game fanatics and like to play, why don't you give them a suggestion on what they need to check out?
Oh, well, that's a tough one. There's so many good ones out there. But one I've been really into lately that's a pretty good intro game, or at least intro-ish level, is called Ex Libris. And it's about building a magical library and trying to get all your bookshelves in order. So it's a fun one to play, about 45 minutes to an hour or so. And it's pretty good.
How about you and I, we'll start a company here, a LLC, and we'll create a board game about sports TV rights. What do you think about that?
that would certainly be interesting. I don't know if there would be much of an audience beyond us, but you never know.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so I let it off, and everyone's listening to this obviously knows by now that the UFC is headed to ESPN. The first part of this was announced a couple weeks ago, and then the other shoe dropped a couple days ago, yesterday, whatever it was, when it was revealed by Variety. They broke the news, and then John Oran picked it up, and everyone kind of found out from there with a official announcement yesterday that essentially ESPN is going to be the home for the UFC outside of pay-per-view and any of their own over-the-top Fight Pass shows, which we're really not sure about at this point. But looking at you know, a bunch of original events, almost 30 original events, I believe, 42 overall kind of shows, doing some pay-per-view prelims. Most of the shows are going to be on ESPN Plus, some shows on ESPN Linear. We don't know if that means big ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN The Ocho, anything like that. So as you were hearing about all this week, you know, based on a few weeks ago with the first announcement, and then yesterday with kind of the whole kit and caboodle, what were your initial thoughts?
Well, I think the ESPN Plus move made a lot of sense. It's interesting that that was all that was initially announced, and then the rest of this linear TV deal came along later. I think the ESPN Plus thing, it's a good fit for both sides. ESPN is really trying to build up that service. They're really trying to find things that will get people to subscribe to it. And what's notable there, too, is that it's not a part of it is about attracting cord cutters and cord nevers and people who don't have cable TV packages, but it's also about attracting the people who already do have cable TV packages and pay an extra $5 a month for more ESPN content. To do that, they really need strong content on there. And so far, a lot of what they've announced is sort of more maybe at the margins. It matters if you're a fan of particular college leagues. It matters if you're a fan of the CFL like I am. But there's a lot of stuff there that wasn't necessarily a big market audience. And I think the UFC is one of the best things they've been able to get specifically for ESPN. But then with this, with the news that the linear stuff is going to them too, that's very interesting to me. And for a number of reasons, part of it, I think, is some repercussions from Fox deciding to really invest in WWE and getting SmackDown, bringing that over there and emphasizing that. But then this makes sense for ESPN to swoop in and steal the UFC's linear stuff. It gives them some more content on the linear channels. It gives them gets them really sort of into the MMA game in a more serious way than they had been. And what's also notable is that it really is going to create a bit of a programming crunch for Fox, it looks like, because Fox used so much of the UFC stuff, especially on things like FS2, on FS1 occasionally. A whole lot of their content has been UFC, and so it'll be really interesting to watch what they replace that with.
Yeah, so we'll kind of unpack what you just said, because there's a lot of different angles here. Let's start with kind of the last point you made about the programming. So, yeah, unless you're a fan of any of the stuff that Fox Sports is going to put on FS1, and, I mean, almost like RIP FS2, there was just so much UFC programming, as you alluded to, mm-hmm. on there that was just taking up space. Unless you're a fan of a NASCAR or the occasional MLB game that goes on FS1, some of the college football games, or some of the stuff you mentioned, or some of the other, soccer, things like that. I mean, for a UFC fan right now, there's really no, unless you're into those things, there's really no reason to watch it anymore, because, there just isn't. Definitely, I think from an FS1 standpoint, that's going to be obviously a huge challenge. I mean, these things weren't pulling massive numbers, but they were pulling in numbers, and they were filling hours. So that's key. What you mentioned with ESPN, I completely agree about the move to Plus, because I think, as anyone knows that kind of follows the OTT space and kind of understands and see where mm-hmm. things have gone and also where they are going now, they need a reason for people to subscribe outside of those fans of just, cricket or some of the other, sports that you were mentioning there. And they need to kind of make a big splash and make people more aware of them. And if they can garner, half a million UFC fans, I'm sure they're hoping for a lot more, but I think obviously that the quality of the shows is going to help dictate that. For $5 a month, I'm sure that's, what's really smart is really they needed a group that is used to paying for stuff, and UFC fans are, because of the whole pay-per-view uh-huh. model, and they're able to transition these people over for, again, $5 a month. And I've heard, a little bit of complaining or just kind of a narrative out there about, well, the UFC, between their pay-per-views and between ESPN Plus, is that, the vast majority of shows are going to be behind a paywall. I get that, but also it's not like it's a $20 a month paywall. It's a $5, and it's to me, you're paying, everything's behind a net wall. Cable's a net wall, or a paywall, if you really think about it, and some of these other things. With the programming, though, with ESPN, I saw this, kind of a question yesterday. I believe it was one of your colleagues that put up a column on Awful mm-hmm. Announcing. I believe that one of the editors for the site was talking about, how is ESPN going to, where are they going to put these shows? Because, as college football, college basketball, there's all these sports that rank above ESPN in the hierarchy. So kind of like, I think an interesting play here is going to be, where do they put all this stuff so that A, people can find it, and the B, that they're able to kind of like serve all the masters. It's going to be kind of interesting to watch.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Yeah, that's one of the things my colleague Joe Lucia hit on in his column about five questions in the wake of this deal. And I think it's very interesting, because ESPN already has so many rights, and in particular, they've got so many Saturday night rights at the time when a lot of these bigger UFC things have often happened. The fight night stuff is a little more flexible and maybe moved around a little more, but people are used to seeing this a lot of these UFC events on Saturday nights, and it'll be interesting to see how ESPN arranges that with all their college football coverage. The one thing that's notable about this, though, is it's important to keep in mind the relative distribution of channels. So if, say, for example, a bunch of prelims and stuff used to be shown on FS2. Well, now, say if they wind up on ESPN News or ESPN News or ESPNU, it may sound like it's a bit of a downgrade, because that's ESPN's like fourth or fifth channel versus Fox's second, but channels are actually in about 17 million more, maybe 20 million more homes than FS2 was. And so even if you're at like the low end of the ESPN affiliated, you're still way ahead of where you were on FS2. But there is a bit of a branding thing there, and there will be some convincing needed to get UFC fans to think, oh, okay, well, this is actually fine.
Yeah. And, you know, I think in this era, you know, most people are pretty smart about how to find stuff. I hear RAM people complain about, well, you know, if somebody changed a network, how are you going to be able to find it? I mean, this is the thing that comes up with WWE whenever they move networks. It's like, well, you have some people aren't going to be able to find it. Like, I think at this point, most people are savvy enough to work their remote to do the search function, you know, and most, you know, a lot of DVRs will actually, you know, pick up the same show even if it moves. I don't really buy that. I think people are going to be able to pick it up. Granted, I think when it comes to maybe the third, fourth tier ESPNs, if they have to move something over, yeah, that could be a little bit of a challenge, but I think most people are probably going to be able to figure it out pretty easily. The other aspects with ESPN, just in general, getting involved with a group like ESPN, there's a lot of positives there, because even as much as they've, people have lamented the end of ESPN, obviously with cord cutting and just some of the other political stuff, anything you want to say that, you know, it's a pile on ESPN year, you know, there's still some prestige with being involved with them, that the, you know, the average casual sports fan still, you know, for the most part, goes to them and sees them as a place to get news and information and all this. And the fact that, you know, there is going to be more ESPN programming on big ESPN and some of those crossover shows and, you know, preview shows for the pay-per-views and things like that. And obviously I would expect more highlights and more attention paid on it. I mean, from somebody that covers this and watches this like myself, I think I don't see any negative in being involved with ESPN. Do you?
No, I think there's you hit on a bunch of them, but I think there's a ton of positives into being involved with ESPN here. For one, it gives ESPN a lot more incentive to cover your sport when they have rights to it, and especially when they have this kind of level of rights to it. And that's, I think, an interesting sort of side part of this. Is the announcement of ESPN bringing Ariel Helwani, who of course is so well known in the MMA world as a guy who's covered this extensively, and having him do this ESPN Plus show. I think that's going to hold a lot of appeal to UFC fans. But beyond that, a part of it is about bringing in sort of a newer audience and getting people, more casual sports fans who haven't really checked out MMA, interested in the sport. And I think ESPN really has a lot of potential to do that, because they have so much programming that can touch on sort of whatever sport they want. SportsCenter obviously can do MMA highlights. A bunch of things like Sports Nation can touch on this if they want to. But SportsCenter really, in a lot of ways, is the big one. And I would not be surprised at all to see MMA starting to get much more play there now that it's an ESPN property. Of course, they've got to be careful with that. They've taken criticism from us and others in the past for the flip side of that, for not covering things that they don't have rights with, and they've gotten much better about that recently, particularly with the NHL. But they do still, they love covering things that they have rights to, and it's worth keeping in mind, too, that like ESPN's so big in terms of not just their linear TV channels, not just ESPN Plus, but also that their website is orders of magnitude ahead of whatever Fox has left after they have fired all their actors and went to just video.
Yep.
They've got massive social media presences. They still have ESPN, the magazine. They've got the ESPN radio affiliates are sort of a loose thing, but I would not be surprised to see more discussion of MMA on certain national ESPN radio shows. So, I mean, you're getting involved with a giant media empire here, and that's even before you go into the connections to Disney and their corporate parent. So I think there are a lot of ways this could be really good for the UFC.
Yeah, the Ariel signing, I thought that was obviously that was newsworthy in our space, because he had been so long associated with MMA fighting and that that web presence that really kind of helped them really anchor their coverage. So I think they're going to have some, you know, they have a very talented staff there, but they're going to have some challenges there, because he's so well known. You know, the ESPN getting the most well known journalist in the space and personality in the space, and already you see they're going to be leveraging him for a show with Chael Sonnen on ESPN Plus, which are launching next month. Which I think they're going to see kind of what effect he brings over with people buying subscriptions and so on to Plus. So I think that's a good kind of way to put their toes in the water. And he's doing some other stuff. I think he'll have his, it'll be interesting to see what his challenges are there with You know, for those people that remember and kind of realize the whole Dana White dynamic and how Dana White essentially got him, you know, the whole Fox Sports issues. But, you know, Dana aside, Dana White essentially got him kicked off the Showtime coverage for Mayweather and McGregor. And that was just a completely petty thing to do. And but now, I mean, his new partner has hired as one of his, you know, I don't want to say rivals, but in a lot of ways, someone that has been a thorn in his side for some, you know, dumb reasons, of course. But, you know, I think that's going to be interesting how that dynamic works, how they if they involve him on shows, which leads into kind of this other thought I had about production and Dana White telling ESPN's Brett Okamoto that USC will continue to handle production like they have with other deals, which is, you know, it's unusual in the pro sports space, especially with ESPN, in that, you know, ESPN handles production for Monday Night Football. They handle production for Major League Baseball. They hire the talent. I mean, basically it's like you have the rights to show this, but you have to staff everything else. And it's interesting that ESPN's like, no, we'll let you guys do it. And, you know, I was kind of hoping for ESPN to take over some elements because I think that the product and the production could use a little bit of a facelift. And my hope is that maybe this inspires some changes. I think maybe they can't do it as status quo because they can't necessarily push around ESPN like they can, you know, Fox Sports 1, so to speak, as far as like you need programming, put it on, just let us go as long as we go, let us do whatever we want. But I'm kind of fascinated to see if the product will change at all or if it's just going to be same old, and you know, you get what you get.
Yeah, you hit on a lot of good points there. I think, by the way, I should have mentioned it earlier, but I think Brett Okamoto has done a really good job of covering MMA at ESPN.
He has.
And doing so when they haven't been a rights holder. And I think it's nice that his work's gained some recognition, and I'm sure he'll be a big part of their coverage going forward. But it's interesting, too, what you mentioned about both the production and about Ariel and what happened in the first place with him getting kicked off the Fox coverage of that and at the request of the UFC. Like you said, I really don't think the UFC will be able to push ESPN around the way that they did at Fox. And Fox was sort of fine with it. I mean, they were certainly fine with it when it came to Ariel getting kicked off that show. They certainly they didn't really think, oh, well, we need to stand up for journalism here. It was more sort of, well, this is our rights partner. This is how they want to do things. And they essentially just acceded to whatever Dana White wanted. I don't think ESPN's going to do that now. And it's interesting that, I mean, the UFC will still have a lot of leverage here, and especially with them still controlling the production, they'll be able to dictate a lot of what does go on TV and what doesn't go on TV and so on. But I do feel like there's going to ESPN does not get pushed around, especially when it comes to things on the journalistic side, and they've also made it pretty clear they try at least to keep their journalism side pretty separate from their rights holder side. So I think that their reporters and their commentators will be able to cover this sport pretty fairly and to do so without Dana White really kicking up a fuss. And if he does, I think they'll have a lot more backing than, say, Ariel got during his time at Fox. But the production stuff is interesting, and I think that's more about the UFC really wanting control than it is about ESPN not wanting to do it themselves. I think ESPN probably would have been interested in doing it themselves and bringing their own sort of approach to it. Now, maybe they're a little less interested now in an era of really managing their costs than they would have been a few years ago. But I think that's still probably what they would have gone for. And I think this is probably at the UFC's inclination to just sort of keep doing things the way they want to. But like you said, I mean, ESPN does have a little more push maybe, and a little more, I don't know, I guess leverage to at least maybe change a few things and to get the UFC programming to be something that really works for them.
One other element that, of course, all kinds of elements I'm interested in, but one that really stands out is obviously the quality of the shows. You know, it's interesting because much different than other sports, I guess kind of similar to how the NFL with their scheduling, because they have different partners, they, you know, they put some games here, some games here, some games here, and we, you know, everyone kind of laments the Monday night package in ESPN, and the Sunday night football on NBC seems to get the best, and, you know, people have kind of heard that discussion before. So they have NFL some control over who goes where, but, you know, for the most part, you know, a baseball game or something like that, whatever the managers roll out there for lineups is what you're going to get. In NBA, if, you know, a featured game against the Warriors and the Spurs decide to sit three of their talents, just because Popovich wants to do that, you know, there's nothing really that people can do about it. It kind of sucks for them, but that's just the way it is. You know, with UFC, because they have, and I was surprised that they stuck with the 12 pay-per-view model, given that some of the numbers they've had have not been that great, and perhaps you want to, you know, sacrifice maybe six pay-per-views, focus more on creating a bigger TV presence with bigger numbers and bigger names, and try to kind of build something there, more championship fights and so on, and save six pay-per-views to the side for your McGregor types, your guys that are really going to generate, and girls that are going to generate a lot of money and do that. I'm interested to see what the quality of the cards are going to be, how they're going to shift this up. Again, the shift between ESPN Plus and also linear ESPN. You know, are they going to treat the main ESPN cards that they're going to get? Are they going to try to, you know, program those like Fox cards? You know, how they do the back and forth? Because, you know, fans are really, the Fox era are really used to, you know, these 6-hour cards that would be on, that'd be on FS1 just because they need to fill space, and you're not going to get away with that. They're not going to have 6 hours of programming on ESPN unless it was like the NFL draft. And even then, you know, they're trying to get it to a nice, concise thing. So I'm fascinated to see how they schedule the cards, how everything kind of works. And I think that's going to be, I think there will be some chafing at some points between ESPN and UFC as they try to figure this out. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how that develops. I'm fascinated by that.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely been a big issue for the UFC, and especially in the last couple of years, is finding the real top-level stars and figuring out ways to do that and to make sort of the lower-level names bigger names. I think that's something they've really struggled with. And I think your idea of maybe doing less pay-per-views and more sort of broad-range, easily accessible events, that I think that could help, because you really have to get these names to a certain level before you have them headline in the pay-per-view. It will be interesting to see. You mentioned the length too, and yeah, I think maybe if you shorten your events, maybe if you have less of these actual fights on a fight night, especially one on a linear television at ESPN, that might maybe help with the quality. Maybe you're only showing the really good, really valuable ones instead of just putting out whatever you can. But, yeah, I mean, there's certainly challenges there for the UFC. And I think it's interesting to compare them to WWE and how that's developed over the last number of years. Because it wasn't all that long ago that WWE looked pretty weak. People are like, well, where's this sport going? They haven't really developed the next names and so on. They've done a really good job of that in the last few years. I think that a lot of people back on board. They've built up a lot of different wrestlers. They obviously have a few advantages when it comes to using storytelling elements and that sort of thing. But I think they've done a really good job of building up those sort of smaller names and making them big names that people know about and care about. And I think the UFC has sort of struggled with that, especially in the wake of like Ronda Rousey retiring, Conor McGregor doing whatever he's doing now. I don't know if there's really sort of the next people to sort of fill those mantles at the moment.
You mentioned WWE. I wanted to ask you a few questions left. I wanted to ask you about basically the news, and it hasn't been officially announced yet, but essentially it's out there that Fox is paying a lot of money to WWE for their quote-unquote B show that they're going to bring to Big Fox SmackDown on Friday nights. And it's a lot of money. And between that and USA Network reportedly looking to pay three times the current amount just for Raw, and that WWE, out of all this, when you compare the two, I think we talked months ago, and we had said, who's going to get more money? We would have said probably UFC is going to get more money. That would have been my thought anyway. It may have been close, but I am stunned that I am not stunned that Fox is bringing on WWE programming to main Fox. It's surprising, but it's not, you know, completely shocking. The amount was surprising. And then also that out of all this, WWE is going to end up ahead of UFC. And this is, I am floored by. But to your point, I mean, they've UFC has struggled with stars. They've struggled with some ratings at times, and WWE can control their own storylines and have the Rouseys. They still have Brock Lesnar. They have this thing. And while, you know, business has not been dynamite when it comes to, you know, ratings every single week and all this stuff, they're poised to make more money in the years ahead than they have ever made in their careers. And this includes the boom periods and just, it's amazing that out of all this, they've ended up the big winners, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think if things work out very well for WWE. Now, I mean, one thing to consider is that their average audience for Raw and SmackDown, both of those are drawing consistently well above 2 million, often about 2.3, 2.4 for SmackDown, about 2.7 for Raw. And even a lot of the best UFC fight nights were drawing under a million. So, I mean, there are a lot more viewers there potentially, it seems, for these WWE shows than for the fight nights. Granted, that's not the whole story with the UFC, because a lot of the really good fights have been on pay-per-view, but there is a huge amount of interest in wrestling, and there still is, and that's why this move makes a lot of sense. I think the thing that really that worked out so well for WWE here is the timing of when their contract came up and who was interested in it. Because to me, this is really about the new Fox. It's about the Fox sale of a lot of their stuff to Disney, and most importantly, about the sale of their TV studio. Once they sell that TV studio, they have even less interest in doing sitcoms, in doing dramas. They'll do some reality shows, but they're really interested in emphasizing sports, and in emphasizing sports on the big Fox Broadcast Network, because all of a sudden they don't have their own in-house TV studio producing stuff for them. And so WWE is a really good fit there, I think. I think it'll work well for them on Friday nights, especially given that that's a night when the other broadcast networks really don't usually show their top-tier shows. I think it's going to bring yet more for them to sell Big Fox as a sports-focused, sports-heavy network, or at least sports-adjacent in the case of wrestling. And I think the other thing that worked out really well for WWE was having interest from multiple parties here, being able to split it between USA, NBC, and Fox. I think they got way more money out of that than they would have if they'd kept both of their shows on the same network. And the other thing that's notable there, too, is with SmackDown going to Fox and with it going to broadcast, that gives you a huge amount more people who are able to watch it. I think from our last estimates, the difference between like a USA and the Fox Broadcast Network, it's just under 40 million viewers or so. So not all of those people are tuning in, obviously, but that's a whole giant audience that can now watch this product. And I think that's going to be really good exposure for WWE.
So final question here. So out of this whole thing, and which we're going to do again in another 5 years, because these contracts are going to be that. And that's what's the best, one of the best parts about this. We get to do this whole thing again with both entities at the same time. Right. I mean, potentially.
Yeah.
What is success at 5 years, you know, the 4 year mark, whatever you want to call it, what does success look like for ESPN, and what does success look like for UFC?
I think the biggest thing for ESPN out of this is going to be how many people sign up to and keep ESPN Plus over it. I think the TV programming is nice. It'll be important. They'll probably get some decent ratings out of it. But I really do think a key part of this is the ESPN Plus play and just building the reputation of that service and getting more and more people to subscribe to it and to keep it. That's really the key corporate priority for them, and I think that the UFC will likely go a long way in helping them. For the UFC side, I mean, I think the success for them is going to be if they get more money in the next TV deal 5 years down the road than what they're getting right now. This is pretty disappointing for them, all things considered, considering that they were talking projections of like $400 million a year for TV stuff, which they came nowhere close to. So I think they didn't get all they wanted here. I think they found a partner that's going to mostly work for them. But I think their real goal is to be in a better position down the road. And it'll be really interesting to see how they do relative to WWE. Because I think a lot of the interest in WWE this time sort of hurt the UFC a bit and hurt what the UFC was trying to pull in.
Yeah, I would agree. I think for UFC, I think they have to use this 5 years to create attractions, and not just, I think star sometimes is an overused term, because I think it's relative now with the amount of content people have access to, that a star could be someone you pay attention to on YouTube for a couple of minutes. Like you were trying to capture someone's attention for an extended period of time. I think that's like the new definition of star in the content era. I think they need to be able to create attractions. I think they need to be able to get outside themselves and realize that maybe a little bit less is more. And maybe that is, in 2020, 2021 could be, doing less pay-per-views if that's what the numbers are telling them, and to make the time that people are committing to spend with them, not the hardcores, because the hardcores will watch everything. Does you need the people that are just like, people that are essentially saying, I'm going to tune in, give me a reason to stick around and make it easy for me to come back and give me a reason to come back. I think if they can hit on that and find some people, get those hooks, I mean, this is their shot to do it. I mean, Fox, obviously, was a big platform and a nice big step up from Spike TV, but they have to kind of get that next generation of people now with, this is the opportunity they're going to have to do it. And they need to hit a home run with it, and they need to be able to admit and make some changes internally and not necessarily go the sideshow attraction route with bringing, there's the whole Greg Hardy story, that's like a whole separate thing, but you need to be able to build contenders, build champions, and build stuff that people can connect to and want to see come fight again, and the coverage makes sense and all that. And I think for ESPN, I think you hit it. I mean, if this group brings in a huge amount of subscribers for ESPN Plus, that's going to be a huge positive. And that's why I expect probably those first few cards to be really, really good, because they're going to want people to be like, take my money. Just, here's my credit card, charge me every month. I'm good. If they can deliver on that promise, and I think that's going to be part of the partnership between them, I think it'll be a home run. And yeah, I mean, we'll see in a few years kind of where we're at. Obviously, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of armchair quarterbacking, Monday morning quarterbacking from after that first show or, something along those lines. But, as these relationships take time to develop, and you need to be able to figure things out. And as we saw with Fox, where you start is often not where you end up. So pretty fascinating stuff. Any final thoughts about all this stuff?
No, I think it's an interesting time right now. And that's the other thing that's going to be notable 5 years down the road is we don't know what the cable TV landscape is going to look like.
Yeah.
Maybe 5 years down the road, ESPN's much weaker. Maybe everyone is on ESPN Plus at that time, or maybe all these streaming services, Turner's Bleacher Report Live, the various other things that people are trying, maybe those are the big bidders 5 years down the road. And maybe there's less interest from conventional TV networks, but it's fascinating that these rights came up at a time when there's such dramatic change in the TV landscape, and that they're going to come up again when there's likely to be even more.
Mm. You can follow him on Twitter, Andrew Buchholz, BUCHOLTZ. Read his work on Awful Announcing, The Comeback, and other websites as well. Anything specific to plug coming up?
I don't think so. We do have a roundtable coming up talking about the UFC and WWE and which is a stronger place. So I guess maybe that's something to keep an eye out for.
That's right. And the Awful Announcing podcast, you can search for that on wherever you get your podcast these days. Just search for Awful Announcing and you can subscribe for free there. Andrew Buchholz, it's been fun getting to know you here and talking about this UFC and TV stuff over the past couple of months, and looking forward to talking to you more in the months ahead. Thanks so much for stopping by.
No problem. Thanks a lot for having me, Josh.
All right, we round out our show today with a fun guest, someone that I picked up on the other day, reading a great column of his on awfulannouncing.com. And he is the managing editor of that very website. And he is also a Shark team commander, the one and only Joe Lucia. Welcome you to the show for the very first time. And Joe, I'll start you out with the really tough questions, even though I asked you this a minute ago. How you doing?
I'm doing very well, Josh. Thanks for having me today. Really appreciate it.
It's a very professional opening we're doing. We're off to a good start already. we'll get right into it. So we actually just talked to, by complete coincidence, I talked to one of your colleagues, Andrew Buchholz, yesterday, and about some of the UFC, ESPN TV dealings and WWE and all that good stuff, more on the business side. But you did this, again, this really good column, five questions that you have essentially about the that need answers following the UFC's deal with ESPN. And I guess we'll kind of start out with a baseline. Is that are you a regular UFC watcher and fan, or are you just kind of like from a fringe, or how does that work with you?
I used to be a huge fan going back to the early Spike days, you know, watching Ultimate Fighter every week, watching all the fight nights and the pay-per-view prelims. In recent years, it's kind of tailed off a little bit. Just because, like, for a lot of people, like, the star power has really diminished and no fighters have really grabbed me like some of the guys back in the day used to. But I still consider myself a pretty big fight fan. I mean, I listen to podcasts. I read up on all the news. I keep my ear on the ground for what's going on, but I just don't watch it as much as I used to.
Yeah. Do you think, and I've heard that from a lot of people, I think is it because of just so many events and it's kind of hard just to keep track of like everything?
I mean, there are, and I have other interests. I don't want to watch fights every week. Some weeks I want to like watch baseball or watch soccer or go out with friends. I don't want all of my Saturday nights to just be consumed with watching fights because there's so many of them going on. And not to even mention Bellator and all those other promotions that are looking pretty appealing with some interesting fights of their own. There's just so much going on. If you want to watch fights every week, you definitely can, but it's a lot to keep track of, especially with people pulling out and getting suspended and having legal issues. If you get your hopes up for this one fight, it could just go away in a week, and it really sucks.
Yep. Something else I've heard a lot too. And also, I think that the thing with so many fights is there's not enough time to actually understand who these guys are and these girls are. You know, there's just like the minute that you had like great results and you want to talk about this stuff, you're on to the next. Like there's already another event coming up the next week, and to your point, like every single week. And there's just not, I mean, with different sports, there's obviously with, you know, baseball is 162 games and basketball is 80 games and hockey and so on, but you have a set roster. So you can kind of like learn about the guys and kind of just, you kind of follow along. It's so much different. UFC, it's like, literally different rosters almost every single weekend. You don't have any time to focus. And that's like, you know, for people that are fringe fans or, you know, more casual fans, like they have to tell us who do we pay attention to? Cause you can't possibly pay attention and be interested in like everyone.
Yeah. And if you get like invested in kind of a fringe guy, then they lose a couple in a row, they get released. I mean, where do you go from there? It sucks to kind of just go all in on one guy and then have them just kind of drop off after a couple of bad decisions or flash knockouts. It's part of the sport, but it really kind of disappoints me that, this happens with such a big roster now, and there's so much turnover. There's less room for guys to kind of mature and grow into themselves if they're not winning.
Yep. So let's go into some of your the questions here, because I thought these were really good, and I think what a lot of people are thinking. So your first one is, where are these events going to be airing? And so, you know, I think people say, oh yeah, ESPN, but as we all know, there's obviously the ESPN Plus element, but kind of putting that off to the side, you really hit it. It's like, you know, in the ESPN linear universe, so to speak, it's like not everything's going to be on big ESPN. There's some stuff that may not be even on ESPN2. And as you point out, like they have a lot of commitments with college basketball, college football, and obviously NBA. You know, just all these other sports that are, you know, higher up than UFC is. So trying to figure out where these shows are going to go, especially on Saturday nights, that's going to be a pretty big trick for them, I think.
Yeah, it's an interesting jigsaw puzzle, and I think you could see more like international events that get placed in like maybe the morning or afternoon hours like we've seen in the past. That could be an easy way for ESPN to still kind of give the UFC a Saturday slot while not really taking the place of a big college football or college basketball game. But what I think is going to end up happening is that like in the spring and summer months when there are fewer of these big college games on, you could start seeing more of the UFC events taking place then. And then in the fall and winter, when you have 18 college football and 18 college basketball games every Saturday, I think you could see more of the ESPN Plus exclusive events taking place then.
Yep, that would make a lot of sense. And I think, I think, and you kind of hit on this, that I think you might see more weeknight shows, right? And I think that, you know, if they're trying to fill, you know, spots from like an 8 to 11 spot, I could definitely see them trying to do more on big ESPN or even ESPN2, trying to just fill some weeknights there where there's like nothing else is going on. But yeah, you're right. It's a really good and interesting jigsaw puzzle. They have all these properties, and how are they going to make them all matter, and kind of where UFC fits in with that?
Yeah, they used to do that a lot back in the day with Spike when they were first getting with the weekday game or weeknight shows. They would have like an 8 to 10 show or whatever, then lead in the Ultimate Fighter at 10 in those first few seasons. That was kind of – that was like the thing they would do, the big plan. And that kind of fell by the wayside in recent years, and it was all Saturday nights and Sunday nights and occasionally a Friday night. And the midweek stuff just has not happened all that much anymore.
Yep. Let's see. So let's go to the second one. So what's going to happen to UFC Fight Pass? This is something that a lot of people kind of been wondering about, because, you know, if you read through the ESPN, the initial release is that essentially if you are an ESPN Plus subscriber, you're going to get access to the UFC's full library of UFC events. Now, whether it includes, you know, some of the other stuff is to be seen, but, you know, some of the other libraries, but obviously the, you know, if somebody's interested in just the UFC stuff, you know, paying $5 a month, you're going to be able to get that. So if you have access to that, and you don't, like, for myself, like, I'm into fights, but I don't care about the regional stuff. I just don't have the time to do it. There is the, you know, some of the library stuff. I go to there. I occasionally watch old fights, but honestly, the experience is so bad because there's so much buffering and lag and just trying to find shit. It's just like, it's just not even worth it. So sometimes I'll watch the live shows, and sometimes they're okay. You know, it's not really, you know, must see TV, but it's just, they haven't even really said out of all this, like, is Fight Pass even going to be a thing when it comes to UFC events? And if not, then what is the point of even having it, right? Unless you're a hardcore fight fan.
Yeah, because there's not going to be any Fight Pass exclusive UFC events anymore. All those are moving to ESPN Plus, and ESPN Plus is only $5 a month compared to Fight Pass, which is 10. So people be doing that to save money. But the UFC doesn't care about that because they're more than doubling their TV rights, getting $1.5 billion over 5 years from ESPN. So they can live with 300,000 people or whatever canceling Fight Pass. They'll make up for it. But I'm really just curious of what happens with the service, because if there's no live UFC shows and it's just the UFC library and the libraries of all these other companies and live fights from all these other companies, it's really not UFC Fight Pass. It's more of just kind of like this MMA streaming service that doesn't appeal to the casual fan. It's for the diehard fan. And when Fight Pass launched, however many years ago, it was going to be described as Netflix for the fight fan. That's what Dana White and everyone kept saying from the UFC. And it's really not going to be that anymore. It's really just a library of old fights and live fights that a lot of people won't be interested in. So I'm really curious if they end up eventually folding that into ESPN Plus, if they eventually just shutter Fight Pass and leave all these other companies up a creek without a paddle. There are a lot of directions it can go, and that's arguably the thing I'm most interested in the future of Fight Pass, because it had so much promise and it really just kind of seems like it has not delivered on that.
Yeah, with the world seeming going towards subscription services, they seem to be just going away from it. And it's weird. Like they seem to be so hot and cold with Fight Pass. And I think that's probably attributed to Dana White, because I think he knows what he knows, and he knows TV and that. But there's, Yeah, it is in a really weird spot. They have this thing and they have all this archives, but it seems to be just an afterthought in a lot of ways, and I think this is just going to make it even worse. So, yeah, I would agree. And on that same route, I was talking about this with Andrew, and that I think when it comes to, you know, some people are complaining that, oh, you know, they're going to have all these events behind a paywall and a $5 paywall. I think ESPN was smart in that they found a sport where their fans are used to paying for stuff. You know, they're used to paying for Fight Pass, they're used to paying for pay-per-views, and that $5 a month to ask them to do that isn't necessarily going to be that much. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I didn't think of that till now, but that makes a lot of sense. And another aspect of it is the UFC doesn't seem to be going away from this pay-per-view model. I mean, we've seen WWE kind of start to de-emphasize selling the pay-per-views and offering them through WWE Network. UFC hasn't done that. What they're doing is essentially having companies like ESPN and Amazon and Fight Pass. They're letting you buy the pay-per-view through them, but they're not giving you the pay-per-views for free with subscription. Right. So they're still taking your money. They just want to take it in other ways now.
Yeah. Yep. Let's see. Next one. How is Fox Sports going to fill out their schedule? And this is a great point because, you know, anyone that's flipped through FS1, FS2, seemingly just kind of looking what's on. I mean, there's just UFC stuff nonstop. I mean, there's just all the shoulder programming they just have stuck in everywhere, in addition to the live events as well. And so now, I mean, as you point out here, they're losing some of the soccer leagues to Turner. And obviously they're adding SmackDown to Big Fox, but I mean with FS1 and FS2, it's just kind of a question of like, what are they going to do after this deal is done? I mean, I think if you're a NASCAR fan, or if you happen to be a fan of maybe a college football team that's playing on there, or some limited programming, it seems like they became like the UFC network in a lot of ways over the course of this deal.
Yeah, I'm really not sure what happens with FS2 because they air so much UFC stuff that it's like you're killing half of the network's programming. I mean, it doesn't get great viewership because it's all reruns and nobody gets FS2 anyway, but you're losing all of that content and paying the same amount for 2 live hours of SmackDown a week. Okay, great. You're getting that huge guaranteed chunk of viewership, but you're losing so many other hours of programming on the other networks that is it really worth it for them? I assume they're just going to start airing more of their studio shows on reruns and maybe more college basketball, college football, auto racing, that kind of thing more often in the rerun spots. But are people really going to watch that just sitting around, watch a full basketball game? I've never understood how people could watch sporting events over and over again. Like fights, yeah, I can understand. But like watching a full 2-3 hour game just doesn't make sense to me. And I don't know if it really has that kind of appeal, like just sitting down and watching 5 fights again.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think the replays just seem to be trying to catch those people at have insomnia coming back late from the bars or something like that, or maybe someone forgot to DVR. But yeah, you're right. I think with running that stuff over and over and over again, it just becomes, I mean, filler is what it is. Kind of like, you know, what's the point? I had someone bring this up to me the other day that in the Fox deal hasn't officially been announced at WWE yet, but you know, they're not denying it. So I think we kind of know what's happening there, that they were surprised that maybe WWE or Fox hasn't made more of a play for more of some of the WWE secondary stuff for like FS1 or FS2, or you know, try to kind of fill in some gaps there, like, you know, NXT or 205 Live or some of their other stuff. And I my guess is that they really want that for the network, and that they, you know, we're talking about UFC, don't not really caring about Fight Pass. WWE is you know, all in when it comes to, you know, their network and having stuff on there all the time. So I would think that seems to be the reason for that.
Yeah, they really kind of started off slowly with the network with this really bad scripted original programming that no one cared about. And then something just kind of clicked and just kept adding more and more live events. And it just started working for them. I'm actually kind of surprised they didn't take a page out of the UFC model and started cutting deals with indie companies to start streaming their events. But what they're doing is working for them, so I really can't criticize it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they have some deals in place, or a couple of organizations in the UK that they have deals with. They're just not actually activating the deals. It's kind of like a almost like a right of first refusal, I guess. And before, I think it was when, if you remember, like Flow Slam and Flow Sports, they were trying to start up this kind of this indie network. And WWE was coincidentally, or ironically rather, they were an investor in this, but they were trying to also compete with it. And it was a really strange space there. So yeah, they're all in on their networks. That's not a big surprise there. Going to the fourth one, this is one that's been answered since, but I still want to chat about, you know, UFC seed control of production to ESPN. So, you know, Brett Okamoto reported, he talked to Dana White, and Dana White said that the UFC is retaining all the rights on production. They're going to keep that. So obviously they're going to bring over some of their talent and all that. I was, when I first saw that news, I was a little bit disappointed because I was kind of hoping that, you know, ESPN could maybe push them to be a little bit better and kind of get outside their comfort zone and how they present fights, which I think, as you know, having watched for a long time, you could watch a show back in 2012 and watch a show in 2018 and production wise, it's like almost identical, right? It's the same, the way they do the entrances, the way they do the side by side, everything is virtually the same, just, you know, tweaked just a little bit. And my hope is that, you know, and maybe we'll see this over the course of the deal, is that ESPN is thinking like, okay, you know, you guys want to put on a 6-hour show on our network. Well, you have to do this. You have to do this. You can't have, you know, an hour long, half an hour long gap between fights, and you got to kind of keep things moving along. So that's my hope. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But what do you think about, what'd you think when you heard that news that they're retaining production?
This is actually the first I'm hearing of it, which doesn't really surprise me because of how much they've always wanted to have control. But a year ago, there were rumors with the new TV deal they'd be willing to give some of that up. And maybe they will give it up in some aspects going forward. Like maybe they'll have ESPN give some insight into doing things to make things flow better, so on and so forth. Because there's so much dead time during these broadcasts with interviews and highlight packages, and we could really make that a little crisper and a little tighter. I'm not surprised that they want to keep their own people around. That's kind of been the UFC way over the years. I think they kind of looked at what happened in Strikeforce with the Gus Johnson debacle. When you get a guy who's not an MMA announcer and you have him call MMA, and it just ends up being a complete disaster.
Yep. Very true. Very true. But yeah, we'll see how that plays out. My guess is, you know, FS1 was so reliant on trying to extend out those shows to get as much of a rating as possible. And I think ESPN is kind of be more like, okay, we got other stuff we got to do here. So we're not going to have that. So that could be a positive if they're saying, look, we're not going to give you 30, 45 minutes between fights just to, like, you know, wait and promote and do other things. Like, you got to keep it moving. So that'll hopefully be a positive if that comes to bear. And then, of course, your fifth question here, the final one, which was, you know, kind of the question a lot of people are wondering about, and we talked about a little bit, is where's the UFC going to rank among all these different properties? You know, they have a lot, and there could be more to come, you know, in the years ahead with TV rights deals coming up and trying to get what they can. And obviously, you know, it's a big home for college football and the NFL and just, you know, Major League Baseball. We'll see what happens. That deal comes up and the NBA and everything. Where they rank, my thought is going to be obviously not at the top, because I think the money is obviously good for UFC, but it's nothing compared to, you know, the NBA deal or NFL deal or something like that. So I think we're going to learn pretty quick over the course of that first year where they rank in terms of where they're placed. We're talking about the days of the events. Basically, how that schedule works is going to tell us a lot.
Yeah, I think it's going to kind of be on par with Major League Baseball in that, baseball has been a part of ESPN for, I think, 30 years now. So it's something that's been with the network for so long. But when you really look at it now, I mean, they don't air Baseball Tonight anymore. They air Intentional Talk, which is an MLB network show. And they air, I think, games in three time slots a week, which isn't really all that comprehensive when you think about it. I think things could be changing when that deal expires, and I want to say three seasons. They're going more in with the NBA, college sports, obviously the NFL. Those are the tier one sports, and then you have the tier two sports, which I think would be Major League Baseball, the UFC, and stuff like college lacrosse and college softball and college baseball, which are airing more and more on the network. I think the UFC will be solidly in that tier, is something that ESPN really likes to promote and go to, but it's not one of those things. It's kind of like the foundation of the company.
Yep, I would agree. Getting away from the UFC as the managing editor of Awful Announcing, what sports media story are you kind of most keeping track of or most, I guess, interested in to see play out throughout the rest of 2018?
ESPN Plus as a whole really interests me. I mean, it's only launched like 6 weeks ago, and they're still announcing rights deals for it. They're still announcing future plans and future shows for it. And over the summer, I mean, there's not a lot going on in the sports world. I mean, we have the World Cup this year, and really that is about it. So I'm interested to see once we get into the fall, once we get into college football season and college basketball season, how ESPN Plus gets content, what games are going to be on there, what kind of subscriber numbers start pouring in, more feedback towards it. I mean, right now, people don't really have a strong opinion on it because there's no real reason to watch it. But once we start getting towards the end of the summer and into the early fall, people are going to expect big things out of it. And if it's not delivering, we could be in for a situation where ESPN might have to rethink it, might have to just kind of give people more content, maybe stuff that's on their linear television networks. Still a lot of balls in the air for that. And I'm really interested to see what happens with that network as a whole in the next few months.
Great. You can follow him on Twitter, JOE_TOC. And anything else to plug, Joe?
No, that's about all. You can find my work at awfulannouncing.com. And I also do some writing about sports in the media world at thecomeback.com.
Awesome stuff. Joe, great column and great getting to meet you. And thanks for joining Josh Nason's Punch Out this week.
Thank you for having me, Josh. Really appreciate it.
All right. Big thanks to you guys for stopping by, and big thanks to our guests for stopping by, John Buchholz, John Pollock, Andrew Buchholz, and Joe Lucia. So follow those guys on Twitter, let them know you heard them on the show, and hopefully you guys enjoyed that. So we're on episode 100 again. One of the reasons I have been a little bit behind the scenes or gone when it comes to this podcast is, let's see, we sold a house, we bought a house, we are staying with our in-laws, my in-laws right now, and so we're all over the place. Young kid, obviously 18 months old, and she is wild and crazy and a daredevil doing Jeff Hardy, teasing to do Jeff Hardy style dives off things and so on and so forth. But life is good, but life got kind of busy with just all the moving parts. We just closed on our house, the new house, yesterday on being Thursday, and we are planning kind of the move in and getting all that stuff done. So there's been a lot going on. And then obviously we had some website issues, if you guys remember, a few weeks ago, and that kind of took up some time. And so, yeah, and we're, always, personnel shifting around, doing this show, and obviously Dave and Brian are doing their thing, going to different events and so on. So it's been a wild and crazy couple of weeks, and I was actually going to ask John about this on the show, but real quick. So if you guys remember, you may have heard, just there was a little bit of a mini Twitter controversy about our the fact that we were doing these all-in tickets and us getting in the role of essentially selling tickets to a show that we're covering and kind of the journalistic things and all this stuff. And I guess if you were, depending on what side you're on with this, I can just speak honestly for me. And I want to say this, that there's that world is completely separate for us. And I can understand why some people may be hesitant of that or just maybe not believe it. I can honestly tell you that there was no like ill will intentions or no like, scratch our back, we scratch yours type thing and all this stuff. The tickets didn't even come from the direct promoter, I guess Cody or the Young Bucks or whoever is actually direct promoting it. The tickets weren't given to us for free. Basically, we were able to get them at cost. Essentially, that used to be in tickets. Like it was a group we were able to secure a group of tickets, and we had to say, okay, how many people are going to buy these? And we thought it would be a good thing for our subscribers to have access to, those that were going, maybe make it a little bit easier for them to get tickets to show, and also if they want to do the Q&A. So we bundled that together, but we didn't make any profit on the tickets. And I just wanted to say that because, Todd Martin, our old friend, he kind of had the few choice words, and of course, Dave Bixenspan. And I don't know. All I can say is this, is that it was done with the best of intentions. I understand afterwards Dave said he wasn't on board, that I didn't hear that, but it's okay. And the tickets sold out and the event sold out quick. So to me, keeping things separate, if we could, we helped out 50 subscribers be able to get tickets for a show, make it easier for them. That's really all I care about. So believe me, if there was other shows, I think we probably that made sense for us. I think we might do something similar, maybe do some sort of spinoff or something like that, where it's completely separate from our day-to-day business. But I don't really know if we want to get into that. But I just wanted to have you hear it from the horse's mouth. I didn't arrange the everything, by the way. Just was kind of helping with the promotion of it and kind of the contact. But I just kind of wanted to say that because that's been on my mind for a few weeks, and appreciate the support as always. But again, it was the best of intentions, and we were able to help some people out and get to the show and make it easier for them, which the show sold out in 30 some odd minutes. So I am completely okay with that. And but we'll think about these things in the future. And sometimes the way in which people ask questions could be a little bit more, maybe I would say less public. I'll say if Todd has my email address, I kind of would hope that he'd email me directly if there was a question. And I did email Todd, and we talked about it, and that's that. So, just different opinions and all that stuff, but we'll call it good there. Let's see, any other cool website stuff coming up we gotta let you know about? I don't think so. Not really. It's kind of a weird time of year. Obviously, we're coming into Memorial Day, kind of quiet in the States, but it's our gateway to summer. So looking forward to that. Hope you guys have enjoyed the content on the website. And my hope is to get back to doing some tweaks and doing some other stuff here in the next few months with some of the podcasts that we have. And, could be some surprises coming along the way. But things seem to be going good. And I want to thank, of course, every single guest that's ever been on the show as we get to episode 100 here. I was my plan was to do a full list of everyone, but that was not in the cards because that would have taken me a little while to do. The show started back in 2015. A very first show was, of course, you guys remember Jack Encarnacion. That was on it's almost to the day that we started the show 3 years ago. So May 30th, 2015. We debuted with Jack Encarnacion of the Laps Fan and Sure Dog, and we did had a good run, and we had a great run all along the way. We had Jack Encarnacion, Jeremy Botter, Chuck Mindenhall, Brett Brookhouse opened us up in those first five shows. Then John Pollock, he was our sixth guest. And for some reason in the archives, as I'm looking, episode 3 is not here, and I don't know why that is, so I have to look at that. But we've had a lot of fun and talked to a lot of people. We talked to people like, I'm just kind of scrolling through here, Jordan Breen, Denny Burkholder of CBS Sports, John Nash, Sam Kaplan, Michael Chiesa, Shaheen Elshadi. We did our year in review shows of Paul Fontaine and a host of others. We had Crooklyn from Bloody Elbow. Again, John Pollock a bunch of times. We had, we had Jeremy Botter a few times. Richard Deitch recently from the Athletic. We had, Andrew Buchholz recently. All kinds of other guests and talked to a variety of top people. And some guys are on the come up, and that's always fun as well, because one, they're usually open to talk pretty quickly, and two, I think it's good because you never know where people hit and kind of wake their way along and do some good things. So I was happy to kind of bring some of those people to you, and hope to do more in the year ahead. I got a list of some guests that I'm looking to book here for the summertime as we get back to business, and some good people that you are very familiar with as well. I did ask Ariel if he wanted to talk about the ESPN stuff in the show before his appearance in the MMA Hour. He politely declined, but my hope is to get him on at some point, hopefully this summer perhaps, and just kind of check in, see how things are going, and ask a couple other questions there. He answered most of the questions that I was going to ask anyway on his show, and I figured he wanted to do that first, but just to let you guys know, I did ask. So without further ado, I always do that. I'm going to get out of here. I'm going to let you guys have the rest of your weekend. And for those in the States, wish you a great Memorial Day weekend. And for those that are not, have a great weekend anyway. Again, big thanks to everyone. Thanks to all you for making this possible. JNPO 100 is in the books. I'm Josh Nason. Until next time, insert catchphrase here.